Welcome to Pastor Aggressive Podcast, real life, real faith, real talk. We got AJ with us again. I don't know when these episodes will come out as far as like the order of when they'll come out. So you may have seen him just recently. You may have seen him a couple months ago. I don't know. But for us, it's just been a few days.
Well, yeah. We've seen him every day.
Well, that's true. Yeah, yeah. A few days since the last time.
Because AJ is our bestest friend in the whole wide world.
At least that's what they say now.
He is our favorite person in Honduras in this room currently.
Besides what he made me do today, man, that was freaking brutal. This guy had me carrying concrete up a 90-degree slope of just just concrete. Just like, I almost died in Honduras.
I don't think you did. I don't think you did.
Yeah, that's bad. No, I didn't almost die. I was very good.
But you did almost pass out.
Yeah, I just needed water.
Yeah.
But Luis got me together, man. He brought me some water, and he kept talking to me in Spanish, and I didn't even have the brain power to ask him what he was trying to say to me. I was like, just let me die.
That's crazy.
But anywho, what are we here to talk about?
We wanted to have AJ on again to talk more about specifically. So we talked about his story the last time we talked with him. We want to talk specifically about the mission that he works with, Mission on the Move, here in Honduras. And so, yeah, we got some questions for you. Just kind of, we can riff off these questions for a while and talk about where you've been and what you guys do here. And we personally have experienced it twice and feel like it's an awesome ministry. Love.
Very needed.
Yeah, love what you guys are doing here. But for people, we talk about it a lot, like quite a bit on the podcast. So it'd be good for people to know kind of what you do. So I guess let's start with who founded Mission on a Move.
Yeah, so a retired United Methodist pastor founded Mission on the Move. His name was Brother Ed Cadle. He was from the Savannah area, south east Georgia, and it was founded out of his Sunday school class.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he got a group of people together, and it was originally started to, and they did a lot of different things. And so Brother Ed founded the organization, and he recently passed about 3 years ago, I believe.
Mm. Wow. Okay, so not that long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he come down here quite often?
Yeah, so Brother Ed, we have ministries in Mexico and Honduras. And so he would visit both fields. He was very active and a part of the ministry in-country and fundraising there in the beginning years. And then there was a missionary couple, Steve and Hope Charouse, came after him, and they kind of oversaw the Mexican, the mission in Mexico. They were the mainstay missionaries there, and then they oversaw several things here in Honduras throughout the year.
So you said he just passed not too long ago. So when did he found the mission?
So he founded Mission on the Move in 1985.
Wow.
And so he wasn't retired at that point. I think he was pastor at that church, the best that I can remember. And he was teaching a Sunday school class, and it was founded out of there.
Do you know anything about like what his thought process was on, like why he wanted to come here?
You know, the first country Mission on the Move went into was Mexico, Tapachula, Mexico. And I'm not really sure how they landed, Mission on the Move landed in going to Tapachula, Mexico. It's in the most southern part, right across the Guatemalan border. But the original ministry there was in response to the Nicaraguan refugee crisis.
Wow.
And so they were working with the refugees that were leaving from Nicaragua during the Civil War. And then through the years after the Civil War ended and the refugee crisis ended, they expanded into childcare. Because during that time period, if a parent went to prison, their child went with them.
What? That's crazy.
And lived with them in prison. And so they started the children's homes there in Tapachula, Mexico. And they would get legal custody from the parent that was in prison to have their child in the children's home. And so the child would be raised there, and if the parent got out of prison, the child would go back with the parent. What's interesting is through the years, Mission on the Move was actually instrumental in the changing of that law in Mexico.
Really?
And that's no longer practiced.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's how, like, that kind of practice of kids going to prison with their parents is like how supervillains are created.
Yeah.
Like, for real. I know you're going to make fun of me because you make fun of my love of comic books, but that's the Batman villain Bane, that's literally his origin
story.
That's
a good point. Yeah, he was in that prison.
He's like, born in a prison. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So how did they come to Honduras?
And so, Brother Ed Cadle, he had some friends that did ministry in Latin America and Honduras and so on. And in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, they converted a school bus into a mobile clinic.
Wow.
And drove that school bus, I believe, from Columbus, Georgia, which is right across the Alabama line, all the way through Mexico, through Guatemala, into Honduras, and was in part of the response to the refugee crisis from Nicaragua, and they would set up medical clinics and do medical clinics for refugees. And so that was before Mission on the Move came to Honduras full-time. Mission on the Move came to Honduras full-time with a program in about 1988 or 1999 in response to Hurricane Mitch that devastated the country. It was a hurricane, Category 5 hurricane, I believe, and it literally set over the country for days and just poured rain. The loss of life was staggering. Parts of the country were discommunicated from other parts, and it took a long time to build that infrastructure back. And I remember hearing a story. Brother Ed came to the village, Santa Elena, and said, "There's children literally starving to death. We have to do something." Yeah. And so the Mission on the Move came to Honduras, Santa Elena specifically, and started a feeding program. And through the years, the ministry has changed and grown into something pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Because you guys still do a feeding program in a sense.
In a sense, yeah.
But with so many different factors. What are some of the factors? Well, first, did they expect the growth that they got? Or, like, what was their game plan? Or was it just by step?
I think it was just step by step and all in faith of seeing what God was going to do and where He was leading. Brother Ed believed strongly in just following God and see where He leads. And that's how they ended up in Honduras, here in Santa Elena.
What a move of God.
Man. And, you know, our purpose, our mission statement is called by God to go and serve vulnerable children, believing the love of Christ brings hope, transforms lives, and strengthens communities.
Amen. That's good.
And so everything we do as an organization is built around four pillars of ministry: family, discipleship, nutrition, and education.
That's really cool.
It's a good thing you're not at five pillars. I'd be worried about that. No, I'm just kidding.
So how has the mission evolved since its inception?
You know, since the inception of Mission on the Move overall, our homes in Mexico, there's three homes there. Each home has children and child protective services with a loving Christian house parent couple that takes care of them. We're in the process of building a transition home there in Tapachula, building a home so when the child reaches the ages of 18, if they haven't finished their high school education, legally they have to leave the children's home. But by having another facility that they can go and live in and grow and finish their education and then have opportunities for higher education and university and so on. Here in Honduras, you know, we start off as a feeding program in 1988, 1999, and it grew into an after-school education program, kind of like a Boys and Girls Club. And so first through sixth grade come to our property every day for a nutritious meal. They come for discipleship class, a time of music and song, a time of reinforcing their studies and homework help and specialized tutoring. And then the Cadle Community Care Center, which is named after our founder, is for children in our community that have special needs that can't attend public school. And that's a new program that just recently started about 2.5 years ago, and we're super excited about it. God's done great things through it. Some children that have entered that program are now attending public school. And then the Oaks of Righteousness, which is our children's home here in Honduras, started in 2017. And so we're currently celebrating this year 40 years of ministry with Mission on the Move in Mexico and Honduras. And God has just done so much over 40 years, and we're really excited to just be a small part of what He's done and what He's going to do in the future.
What is the network of Mission on the Move? How has that grown since the original guy? Like, do you guys have tons of board members, or what's it like?
Yeah, so we have our board ranges, I think, 19 to 21 board members at a time. You know, we were founded in the United Methodist Church, and over the years, we are multi-denominational, multicultural to some extent. We have churches that are involved that are Baptist, Southern Baptist, Independent Baptist.
No, I'm just kidding.
Presbyterian. Presbyterian, Global Methodist, General Baptist, interdenominational.
Yeah.
And so we really just have a lot of churches that have come along, believe in the mission of Mission on the Move and serving vulnerable children both in Mexico and here in Honduras.
So we've talked about this a lot, our likeness in Christ and like all these denominations. And we make a lot of jokes about denominations, but it's all for fun. Like what we really believe is like we should all be coming together in Christ, regardless of the little doctrinal differences, because the Spirit is using us all in the same way. You know, as a Baptist, the Spirit's not going to use me differently than if you're a Pentecostal, mm-hmm. right? So, like, I love that you guys can all come together with different beliefs, but still serve people, real people. These beliefs are just nonsensical. They're silly to an extent, but you can come and do important things as a group with people who need it.
Kind of like we always say, it's about keeping the main thing the main thing.
We have more in common than we have
opposite.
Right. So let's focus on what we have in common and accomplish a common good.
The thing we have in common is the blood of Christ, and through that we operate in the gifting that God has called us to. And I think it's important to stay on mission, because if we get so focused on how divided or different we are, then it kind of takes us away from the mission, which is we're all called to go and make disciples, and that starts with things like this, like education programs and just making sure people have their basic needs met so that their spiritual needs can be examined and exposed.
Right, exactly. And one thing about being on the mission field, you know, I've been here for 13 years in Honduras, is those denominational boundaries seem to dissolve. Like
when
we
you're
just
out here.
All work together
yeah.
because we all know we're here for the same reason.
Yeah.
And that's what's beautiful with us with Mission on the Move and our supporting churches. Is we all have a common goal, and that's to serve.
Yeah, that's an interesting insight too. That you guys don't just go to certain denominational churches; you go to Christian churches, mm-hmm. capital C Christian churches, and whoever is led by the Spirit to give or support or come out or do whatever they want. Just real quick, just throw it in. How can people reach out in that way if they want to support?
So visit our website, missiononthemove.org. Find us on Facebook, Mission on the Move Honduras, Mission on the Move Mexico. And there's our funding operation in Mexico. Our children's home is funded through child sponsorship. And so there on our website, you can go and pick out a child to sponsor or just support the general operating budget for everything that happens there in Mexico. And then the same for here in Honduras. We our education program, the Boys and Girls Club, funds off of child sponsorship. We have 86 students in our education program this year, and so we currently have about 14 or 15 students that need child sponsorships, and so that's how that ministry is funded, and God has been really good throughout the years to help us fund those children and make it a great thing.
Praise the Lord.
You talked about how Mexico and Honduras, you've got both of the missions, but so overall, the whole thing's been going for 40 years, right?
40 years.
So when did Honduras... Because I know Honduras was like the second one started.
Yeah,
right?
So like in 1998, ended 1999.
Okay, awesome.
So
what's some of the... For people who don't know, you know, we kind of talked about the need in Honduras a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What is Honduras like? Like, when was it established? What's the story of Honduras, and what's it like now?
So Honduras sought independence from Spain in 1821, and became an independent country. There was a small period of them being all the Central American countries combined as one, and then they divided off into individual countries. Honduras is one of the only Central American countries that hasn't had a civil war.
Really?
There's been a couple of times where it's been close, but they've never had a full war, civil war. And
That's
so
crazy.
Honduras is a beautiful country. It has a lot of natural beauty, a lot of things to see and do. We kind of have a bad rap for organized crime and drug trafficking. But as long as you're not really involved in those things, it's really nothing to worry about. You just have to be aware of your situations and everything around
you.
And
when we're here with you, it's like, we're not going anywhere. So anybody that wants to come, like, do not worry about
it. Right. I mean, we've had people up into their 80s. Somebody on this team now is 84 years old. Somebody on my last team was 80. And so, you know, don't let an age be a prohibitor from coming on a mission trip.
Or the safety thing. Like, my doctor was really, he was like, why are you going back? Isn't it, like, super dangerous there? I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
What was the joke he told you?
I did say, I was like, man, I was like, I know not to drink the water. I know to be careful about that stuff. You know, I got some inoculations just to be safe on some things. And I was like, ah, I'll be fine. And he's like, I was like, but, you know, the water, I won't drink it. But I said, man, where I'm going, I see the kids drinking the water out of the tap all the time. And he goes, man, bacteria doesn't care where you're from.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, just certain things, you know, be aware of where your ice and water is coming from.
Yeah.
You know, when you come with us with the mission on the move here to Honduras, we always make sure to have clean, purified water for you to drink and make sure the ice and any restaurant that we take you to, we have confidence that they're practicing best practices in food preparation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and another thing is, like, where we stay, like, we're in a hotel right now. You guys can see it. Super cush, like, easy way to live. They leave bottles of water for you to brush your teeth. Like,
yeah, because you don't want to brush your teeth with the sink water.
Yeah. When you come here, you could probably come here with $0 in your pocket and be okay.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
What was the original
need for the Honduras mission? Like, what made them expand out from Mexico to Honduras?
Right. Like I mentioned, they were just really focused on, you know, providing nutritional meals for kids that were literally starving here in the mountains. And that has continued to grow. You know, nutrition is still a core pillar of ministry here in Honduras, because the feeding program is now expanded. And that's really what we came to Honduras doing, expanding the education program. You know, we were talking about the different things that the children do at the education program, how it's grown into something different than what it was, but still also staying on the main focus. And so, you know, I really went over what we provide on a daily basis. But at the beginning of every school year, you know, there's certain things that are required for a child to attend school.
Yeah.
And here in Honduras, you have school uniforms, you have specific shoes that go with each uniform, and school supplies. And all that adds up to about a week and a half worth of salary per child just to buy those things for that child to attend school. And so by being part of the Mission on the Move education program and being a part of that and what child sponsorship, as I mentioned previously, provides, is we eliminate all those costs that a family would have for their child to go to school. So that's including recovering school uniforms, shoes, backpacks for some extent, school supplies, any fees for the child to be registered in school, and anything that's required throughout the school year for the child to remain, or projects, we cover those expenses as well. And so it really eliminates any reason of poverty for a child not to be able to continue all the way through high school.
Yeah.
What is the average income for somebody in Honduras?
You know, a lot of people, especially in the community that we work in, that are field workers, is probably about $2 a day.
Yeah, which is how much in Lempiras?
About 50 Lempiras.
50 Lempiras. Man, that's... I was talking with Luis today, the maintenance guy for your mission, and he asked me how much I made, and then he told me how much he made, and he was, like, blown away by how much I make.
Yeah.
But in America, like, what I make doesn't seem like a lot, but then he told me how much he makes in, like, U.S. dollars, and I'm like... I was, like, blown away. I was like, we don't know how good we have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, a monthly salary here is about $450.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe just a little bit less after the Social Security thing is taken out. And that's, you know, we with Mission on the Move, we believe in also providing wages for our workers that are justified, what they deserve for what they do.
Yeah.
And what's legal. We provide all of our employees with legal contracts that provide them, give them their rights as Hondurans in the labor force. And so we believe in giving a dignified wage for their work and giving good quality jobs.
Yeah.
And so that's something that we believe strongly at with Mission on the Move in both countries.
Yeah.
Is following the labor law and making sure that we're up and up providing our employees what they deserve.
Yeah, and it seemed like you give them, like, it's good work. Like, it's not, you know, just for nothing.
It's not slave labor.
Right. It all has a purpose, and it's all like,
well, really good. When I'm doing it.
Yeah. When Zach's doing it, we kind of wear him out a little bit.
No, your guys seem super happy, super well taken care of and provided for. And I think that shows a lot about your guys' organization.
You know, when we go through interviews and things with our employees, we also make it clear that, you know, it's just not a job.
Right.
Yeah.
We believe that working with Mission on the Move and the line of work we are in is a calling, and that they're called to serve, to some extent, their own people.
Yeah.
Whether that's cooking in the kitchen, preparing meals every day, as Pasita does, or Luis and Arnold chopping grass, cutting the grass every couple of weeks, and just teaching some of our kids in the children's home little small maintenance things that they can learn and pick up over time.
Yeah.
And then our teachers that do a fantastic job in tutoring and making sure that our kids are staying up with their studies.
And they're so patient, too. I went to the special needs ministry area to see some of those kids because I hadn't seen them since last year. And I went to go talk to them a little bit, and the kids came up and gave me a hug. It was really sweet. And then I had a question about one of the kids that I hadn't seen in a while. And the teacher was like so patient to have a conversation with me. She did not speak English. My Spanish is not good at all. But she was patient with me, talked very slow, and helped me to kind of like work out the conversation. And I think we both had a conversation that I think I understood. So, but that, like, the fact that she was willing to just take the time and be patient with me and work through it with me was awesome. And they have that same patience with the kids.
Yeah.
And seeing them work with some of the kids who are kind of acting up, and how sweet and patient they are with them is just excellent.
Yeah.
Even you, I saw you. I got a really good picture of you reprimanding a child in a very loving way. And it was awesome. Like, the way that everyone here takes care of the kids. And that doesn't just mean letting the kids run around and do whatever they want. It's very structured and very organized. And I think in a healthy way that, like, really shows them a good, healthy discipline and love that is the reality of, like, what our relationship with Christ is like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's like, just because we didn't do the right thing doesn't mean that He doesn't love us.
Right.
The same way, some of these kids sometimes act up, and you guys lovingly correct them. And I'm telling you, man, I'll send you the picture.
All
it's
right.
very sweet, and like, you can tell that you're like telling her that she needs to do something differently. I'm not sure what, because I didn't understand the Spanish, but it was so gentle and loving and with so much care. That and that's what I see from all of the people here, all of the teachers. Just I've not seen any of them like give a scowl at a kid or get frustrated, or you know, they're very calm and very patient, and I love that.
You know, having a children's home, you know, our children's homes in both countries are based on family style. And so we have Christian house couples, that parents that live in each home. And that's a 24-hour job.
Yeah.
6 days a week.
Yeah.
They have one day off a week. And, you know, you just see their patience. You haven't really had much interaction with the house mothers.
Today we did.
Today you did, as one child escaped.
Our little buddy ran away. Our little buddy ran away from his timeout.
Yeah.
We thought he was just coming to see us, so we let him. He ran from the house to like where we were working on the gate. Gave us a big hug. He helped with some of the paint stuff, and then all of a sudden, here comes the house mom walking down the street. I was like, oh, I think he's in trouble. I don't think he was supposed to be out here.
To be honest, the way he was running down to us, we kind of...
We should have known.
Like an escape, like an escaped convict.
But that's so cool that they have the patience to do that every day.
And even the kids, they're so sweet. They just, like, they come up and give you hugs, and they sit on your lap. And then to me, that's just a telltale sign of somebody who's experienced love, healthy intimacy from an elder. I want to say a parent, and in a way they are the parent.
Yeah.
They are the parent.
Yeah.
So that's just a telltale sign.
It's so hard to explain to people back home what it is you do here, because like the word we would use in the States is like orphanage, but that doesn't explain it, because it's not like that. Because when we think of an orphanage, we think of kids that are like not having a good time. We think of like, yeah, you know, little orphan Annie, yeah, type thing. And it's not that. These kids are having so much fun, and they like they seem to get a lot of joy out of life.
And they're like free range little chickens, dude. They yeah, have so much room to like run around and play.
And it's such a beautiful facility and well painted.
Yeah, whoever you guys have painting, man, they're good, man.
You know, that front gate looks legit.
It does. I will say, I told Arnold today, I said, well, now that we painted all the green on the gate tan, we're going to have to paint all those green pillars on the main building. And he was like, nah, shh, don't say
it. That's for another day.
Yeah,
that's for another day.
Oh, man, that's awesome. So we just, I mean, it's been a while now. It's been about 5 years, sort of. But we, you know, how did the pandemic impact the ministry? Because I'm sure that had to be crazy.
Yeah, and you know, some things that happened in the pandemic, we still feel today. We still kind of have some of those things that we changed in our model. During the pandemic, you know, actually a year, almost to the day right now as we're recording this pandemic, the world came to a grinding halt.
Yeah.
And we had a missionary staff here in country, Ernie and Allison Sizemore, who were directors for 10 years here in Honduras and really grew the program to what you see and know it as of today. And Donna, she was our team coordinator here in country. We were all here, and they were able to get an evacuation flight out, and I stayed. And, you know, during that time, us as a team of four missionaries, we really had to evaluate what we do, why we do it, and what we do. What do we do and why we do it? And that's when we came up with those four pillars of care.
Yeah.
Education, nutrition,
so that's
discipleship.
Recent.
Yeah. Discipleship and family.
Wow.
And we said, okay, we got to focus on what we're doing. And we used those four things and evaluated how we were operating. Mm-hmm. What was essential, what was not essential. And we know that God calls us to whatever we do in excellence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so during that time, the education, our program director, Hesse, had just started 2 weeks before. And so she has no idea what's going on. She's just getting used to her position. School shuts down.
Yeah.
And it was really difficult. But she and the teacher assistant, the teacher that we had on staff at that time, Oneida, she's still with us, they started doing, printing out all these materials. And they would take them and drop them off to different homes. The school would communicate, you know, students are doing this or should be doing this.
Wow.
Took about a couple months to get to that stage. But they would do home visits, and then she would, Oneida would go and do home visits and do one-on-one tutoring around the community. And shortly before the pandemic hit, we started talking, and the community leaders reached out to us about the Cato Community Care Center that it's known today and opportunities for special needs children to be able to study. So that kind of got put on hold, and the school system here in Honduras was really shut down for almost 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And students suffered. Our kids at the Oaks of Righteousness really struggled, especially going back because they were kindergarten and first grade during that period. And that was really a bulk of our children were in those grades during those 2 years of shutdown.
Wow.
And so we had to, you know, work on them. They're becoming of age. They were cooped up at home for 2 years. They got out, maybe going to church. Honduras was shut down almost a year,
yeah,
from any movement and so on. So it was just a really difficult time. But our house parents, they rallied around each other. They worked together. Our people of education program rallied around each other. They ministered to the children. They worked through tutoring and so on. We provided food bags because we couldn't provide food on a daily basis to the children during that time. So for about a year and a half, we provided monthly food, supplemental food bags to the families of children that were in the education program because they were no longer on our campus every day. And so we provided food bags to them to supplement that. And I remember when we first finally reopened, the kids were so excited. Some had never been before. They'd been in the program for 2 years
and
had
never
been really on campus.
Unbelievable.
And so just that reopening and having everybody come back and getting people caught up, and we got the Cato Community Care Center launched after the reopening, after the pandemic. We've hired a tutor since then for the children at the Oaks of Righteousness. She's also a psychologist, and so she's doing does evaluations and is observant of how the children are progressing and their behavior patterns and things like that. So we learned a lot in the pandemic. We grew during the pandemic.
That's amazing, yeah.
Which is awesome. And we stayed financially stable for the most part, especially through those first 2 years. After that, we kind of lost some support momentum, but we were slowly working on and recuperating that, and God was just good through it all. We really didn't know what was going on, but day by day, He was faithful, and the ministry continued.
Honestly, sometimes when you're in a place of comfort and things are just rolling, you kind of need to get like a rock in the road.
Yeah, that's what's making me nervous right now about life. What's that? Another rock in the road.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I was young in the faith, I used to pray for bad things to happen to me so I could grow.
Dude, you're wild. I can't with you.
I'm well over this.
I'm going to leave you here with Arnold.
My pastor died. My dad died. My brother went to prison. I had enough, dude.
So you mentioned how the pandemic changed some things that needed to change.
Yeah.
I think we see that in not only like cultural things in the States too, but in the church also. Like one of the cultural things I think that changed is people not going to
attending.
Like not going to work in church and stuff, and not getting out to places and exposing other people to their sickness when they're sick. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's how it is here, but in the States, people would just be like, "Yeah, I know I'm sick, but I'm going to go to work anyway." And then they get other people sick, you know. And we like send our kids to school sick and get other kids sick.
Yeah.
And the pandemic kind of like made people think like, okay, hang on, we maybe need to maybe take a couple days off when you're sick, and that's okay, and it's good. And I think that's one of the good things that came out of it. But another thing that came out of that I think is really great for the church is every church kind of had this need now to some extent do a live stream, and. While I'm an advocate that people should be in church, I think it's really important for people to be connected to a local church because you get to do things like this
right.
out of that. It's birthed out of that. But there's also recognizing that sometimes people are sick or there are people who cannot get out of their house. And to have the live stream available for people like that, I think is so valuable and vital because it gives you an opportunity. I wouldn't use it as a crutch, but it gives you an opportunity when you can't be there. Like you even said, you attend an online church a lot of times too, because just the way things are here, it's easier for you to do that and to find a church that speaks your language.
Exactly.
I think that's such a good thing. And that birthed out of the pandemic. Like it was a necessary thing because of that.
You know, something you mentioning that, something I remember during the pandemic, and it's still an option to this day. You know, we have teams that come down like you guys.
Yeah.
This year, I think we have 10 or 11 teams on the books coming down to Honduras.
That's amazing.
And during the pandemic, especially the first year we were just trying to survive, but the second year, people wanted to know, how can we go to Honduras? And we're like, well, you really can't go.
Yeah.
Like, it's still difficult.
Yeah.
Because of vaccine regulations and all of that. And so we started virtual teams.
How's that work?
And so during the pandemic, that second year, we had a project list. And we had, I don't know, 20 projects. And what we would do is we would advertise to churches, our supporting churches, hey, we have this project. Would you guys be interested in doing a virtual team? And so we would either do a one-day virtual team event or do 3 nights or 4 nights. And they would send in the money to do the project. We were to record and make a video for each night of the virtual team. If it was one day, it'd be one video. If it was 3 nights, we'd make 3 different videos of the project. And then we would Zoom in with them as a missionary team.
That's so
and we
cool.
would share in a time of devotion with them, show them the progress of the video for that day. And then it would all be in one day if it was a one-day event or spread out over 3 days. And it was a really good way to connect with people that still wouldn't be an active part of the ministry of Mission on the Move, but couldn't come.
Yeah.
And so it's something that we still have available for churches. You know, there's some senior groups that still want to be involved and know what active ministry is, but can't travel to us.
Yeah.
And so we still have a list of projects, and that's an option we still have available. If a church wants a virtual missions trip, we can still do that.
That's so awesome. That's something I think people miss out on. They don't realize that there's other things you can do as part of the mission team that's not just being the ones who are sent.
Yeah.
Like praying.
Yeah, we have a group back at my church that has like a specific list for every day, 3 times a day. These are the things we want you to be praying for mm-hmm. us right now. So we have a prayer team that's doing that right now,
yeah.
praying for our team. And they're a part of the team, just in a different way.
Exactly.
Or the people who funded the trip for us to come. They're a part of the team in a different way.
Right. We all have different callings.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it all takes, you know, we're all the body of Christ, and it takes different parts of the body to make it function.
Yeah.
And so everybody has a role, either in going and sending financially or supporting through prayer.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Warner would be like the butt. He's always farting. Always.
That's you.
I did just fart.
we talked. You mentioned devotions with the teams. That's something I guess I would probably want to talk about too.
Fellowship
is. What do you from? So we've talked about what the mission does for the people here, but what do you think the call of Mission on the Move is for the people that come here?
You know, I think. On the last night of every trip or the morning before you leave, one of the questions is who are you going to invite next into missions with you?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a calling. And that's the next step. It's who are you going to invite to go with you on your next mission, whether it's with a Mission on the Move or serving in your local community wherever that's at, or going to another country with another organization. But look to who you're going to invite into missions next.
Yeah.
And then another question on that document is how you can best support Mission on the Move coming into the future. And that's either coming on another team, surrendering and answering the call to go as a missionary. We're looking for missionaries for Honduras and Mexico both. Yeah. And so there's many things. And then them praying. You know, when you come on a team, you're provided a 31-day prayer guide for Mission on the Move. And so pray for us. Pray for those things that are detailed on that list. And then also support financially through sponsoring a child. You know, for here in Honduras, it's $35 for a half sponsorship or $70 for a full sponsorship. Yeah. And so there's just many ways that people can get involved and join us on this journey that God has put us on.
Yeah. I think there's a part of coming on a trip like this where we're ministering to each other, not just the people that we come to minister to. And I'm seeing that in a different aspect as like leading the team this time versus just being a part of the team last year. And one of the things I've seen is people stepping out of their comfort zone with leading the devotion. So like one of the things you suggest when we're coming here is that each night we do a devotion and somebody from the team leads it.
Yeah.
And that's been really awesome to see these guys come up with devotions and the discussions that have come out of it. And we've had, and it doesn't only happen at devotion time. Sometimes it's a breakfast or a dinner or while we're digging trenches for a plumbing pipe, you know, there's like all these things that these opportunities for us to minister not only to the people here in Honduras, but in our group too. And I don't think people get that. I think that's the part that, like, if I were to try, the best way I could try to convince somebody to come on a mission trip that isn't sure about it, the main thing I would say is that you're going to get ministered to just maybe even more than you minister.
Yeah.
And you come out of it with a deeper relationship with the people in your church and a deeper relationship with the Lord that's like, I just don't feel like you can get that experience just doing the day-to-day and not going outside of your comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah. You know, there's or churches that come on trips, and they all go to the same church, but they really don't know each other.
Right.
And so you come on a trip, and there's people that are on the team that you know each other. You may wave at each other for across the sanctuary or going from Sunday school class to service. But when you come on a trip, you make new friends. You make new community within your church. And so, you know, when you go back, you have people that have spent a week together, 5 days together, in a foreign country, serving and on this missions trip. And they go back to their congregation, and then they go back to their own circles of social and Sunday school classes and small groups.
Yeah.
And so that excitement then spreads. And they're like, I think I know somebody that went on that trip with you. Let me talk to them too. And so it just kind of, it's contagious.
It is.
You
it
go
really
back
is.
Into your home churches.
Warner and I have our own testimony of this in itself. Warner and I weren't real close until we did this mission trip. Like me coming on this mission trip was just out of the blue, you know, how the Holy Spirit works. But after we like start this podcast, and like I see Warner once or twice a week now, and I'm active in his church. It's not even my church. It's like an hour away from me. And I'm like active in his church here and there. And it's like just Matt. Like I would have never got the chance to meet Matt or Phil or these people we went on last time. And now Frank and Bob.
Yeah.
And share stories and hear testimonies and build relationships, man. Because we're building relationships here, but we're also building relationships back home.
Yeah.
And you talk about getting to know people in your church. And as a pastor, it's hard to know everyone in your church.
Yeah.
especially as it grows.
Shame on you.
So Frank and I have known each other for a while, but Frank's been going to my church since he was, like, he grew up in my church, and he's 84, as we mentioned before, so like, he's been there a long time. And I feel like I know him pretty well. We have we've talked a lot because of music and stuff. We just really enjoyed that stuff. But even in knowing him a little bit in that way, I feel like I've gotten to know him so much in this trip, and I've learned things about him, and like, just like this, his spiritual depth, I've got to know a little bit more, which is really awesome to see. Like, he's got some just absolutely radical testimonies that we heard this last night.
Yeah.
And just stuff that I wouldn't have even, I don't even know if I would have necessarily thought that he would like fully be like, you know how some people are just like, I don't believe all the supernatural stuff that God can do. I know God can do anything, but they're kind of hesitant. Mm-hmm. Like, I learned some stuff about Frank that he believes that, like, because he's had these experiences.
Yeah.
And they're not experiences that he and I have talked about before, even in all the times that we've talked. And it's just, it's cool to get out here and do that.
Yeah, learning that Frank is a Pentecostal.
He did say he went to a Pentecostal church before, yeah.
He did.
That's funny.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. So, what are your future goals? Or what is the mission's future goals?
Yeah, so here in Honduras, like, we really have had the vision for the past couple years of expanding our borders. You know, the community that we're serving now isn't the same community that we came into in 1998. It's grown, it's developed, there's a little bit more economic stability. The extreme poverty isn't as dire as it once was. And so that opens up opportunities and thought processes. Okay, we're at communities that are close by. Can we go into that need help? And so that's something we're praying about now. There's a couple of communities that we're looking at and praying about that might be good opportunities for us to expand into. And so, you know, and with the children's home, you know, we are always willing and able to receive calls from child care services to take in children that fit the capabilities that we have. Sometimes we get phone calls and we have to say no because it's outside of our skill sets and the services that we can provide. But we're always ready to expand into the children's home area and take in more children. But right now on our radar is expansion and that for the education program, and that's something we hope to do in the next year or so.
Yeah.
What is that going to take?
It's going to take about 1 year worth of financing to get it off the ground, about $1,200. And once we have that ready to go, it's getting those children sponsored. And so that the next year, the program is funded through child sponsorship, and then it goes on from there.
So hopefully you get caught up on the 14 that need sponsored now. So people that will sponsor in the future, are they just going to be sponsoring for a future child?
So we, unfortunately, sometimes we have turnover in child sponsors.
I believe it,
that
yeah.
can't, they don't, they dedicate for a period of time, but for some reason or another, they have to give up their child sponsorship.
Especially during COVID and stuff like
during
that.
During COVID and things like that. Hmm. And so recently we were at zero on paper, all of our children were sponsored. But after going through our database and reviewing lapsed donations and things like that, we came up with lists of about 14 students that need child sponsorship still.
So would you say, just from a practical standpoint, if somebody's unsure if they can afford the full sponsorship, what is the half sponsorship doing?
So it's just helping secure and cover that child's cost. And we'll look for a second sponsor to pick up that other half.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not even exaggerating or joking at all. I think if you come to our church in August with the same need, I have a feeling that at least half of those would be able to be. Not to deter anyone else who's trying to give money. Please give to this. But I really do believe that once people see these kids and get and hear your heart for this mission and know like what the need is and how they can be a part of that, I really think that you're going to see a lot of that get filled.
Yeah, after coming is instrumental and
I want to take all these kids home with me. You know, we talked about that a little. Just like, It really breaks your heart a little bit. I was telling Zach, the hardest part, I'm going to get emotional, but like the hardest part is when we, each day we leave, we get to say Hasta Mañana, but eventually on Thursday it's going to be Hasta Luego, and that's hard.
Yeah.
And I think if people could see that at the churches and see these kids and get to know them, that changes everything. Like seeing them, piece of paper is fine, but when you really get to know these kids and like hear their stories, it's like you can't help but want to be a part of what you're doing.
You know, I can go and speak at your church 10 times, but until somebody from your church comes, until the church comes and visit, and you can put a face with the story,
right?
You can put a face from the off the piece of paper in your front of your face.
Yeah,
that's when the real change and the heart change comes in the understanding of what missions is.
Yeah, it's not just like
what it really, what Mission on the Move is really doing here in Honduras.
Yeah, it's not like, it's not just like one of those ads at 1 a.m. in the morning. Right. Like sad music sponsors this child. And these kids here, it's not like sad. It's not like they're begging for money. But you see what the mission is doing for these kids, and it just gives you a heart to want to help. Because realistically in America, we spend $35 a month on milkshakes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, cut the milkshakes out.
Yeah.
But you really need that move of God in your heart.
Right.
To want to give up the things that bring you comfort, which is another part, and this is just challenging, like, of coming on the mission trip in itself.
Yeah.
Is giving up your comfort, your stability for the week, and just surrendering.
And I hope part of the way my church raised funds this time, I hope that shows other people. Because one of the concerns that people had was, and I don't, I, you maybe don't even want to go into this, but the cost to come out here for a team is actually not that much compared to other mission trips that I've looked at. And so, but that is a concern for people a lot of times. They're like, I just can't come up with that amount of money that quickly. And one, we're going to have probably a year now between the next time. So that'll help a little bit. But, I hope that people seeing what the church, how the church sent us this time will encourage them to like, okay, I don't have to worry about that part. Right. Take that part out of the equation and just trust that God's going to provide the money for that. And then that takes one more hurdle out of the way.
Right. I think with airline tickets and everything, your trip this time was maybe maximum $1,300.
And we only paid
$800
each.
Yeah. And so, I mean, compared to other organizations and everything, that's relatively low. Yeah. And it's a short flight. It's a small, it's a short
4 hours.
Travel day. And so you leave at 6 a.m. from Indianapolis and you're here by 12.
Especially when the team leader gives you the shortest layover in Atlanta ever. That was so scary. But we made it.
We made it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here in Honduras, I think for a week, it's 110 a day right now. It may change next year, but it's right at 110 a day, and that's everything included. And
everything. So, that's the
really
thing,
don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
More food than you can handle.
And it's good food, too. And not like we're spoiled on this. It's the same, like, the kids get the same food, and it's good food. Yeah. And that's awesome. I love to see that, too. Like, today, that stuff we had was awesome. Yeah. It's some vegetable, and you know I don't really care for vegetables. Some vegetable that's exclusive to Honduras that I'll never be able to eat in the States.
That nut juice that we drank.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Tamarindo.
Yeah.
And blackberry juice.
Oh, Frank will not stop talking about blackberry juice. He's like, I was really hoping we'd have blackberry juice today. We actually looked at it last night because I was like, surely we can get this in the States. Which is crazy that it's this way, but it is so expensive in the States. It's like the only one we could find was $30 for half a gallon. $60 a gallon for blackberry juice?
Blackberries in the States are expensive, dude.
I guess. That's bonkers.
Well, I mean, if you buy this is way off topic, but if you buy a gallon of hand-picked wild blackberries, it's $30.
Yeah. And that's not going to give you a gallon of juice.
That's not going to give you a gallon
not
of
even
juice.
Close.
Something really cool about Honduras is seeing like all the like what is the word? All the resources you guys have, all like the food, the different like pineapples and coffee and coconuts and all this stuff. Like there is like so much here to offer, but it's kind of weird. I think Frank and I were talking about this that they have all these resources. Are you okay talking about the government status at all?
Yeah, I mean, in Central American countries, you know, they have the name Banana Republics for a reason.
Oh, right, right.
There's instability.
I thought that was cologne.
That's a store in the mall.
It's a store in the mall. But, you know, all Central American countries have always had instability.
Yeah.
And it's something to this day that's still an issue. That's the reason, you know, a topic that's way, way too common in the States now is is illegal immigration.
Right.
And things like that cause illegal immigration. And so it's some things that, that are difficult to talk about and address, but instability, legal, good wages are hard to find sometimes. Yeah. And that's the reason we're so dedicated as an organization is providing those things.
Right.
So that people and families don't have a reason to run.
Yeah, because you've got a need for the mission, but also there's probably people in your community that have a need for a safe, healthy, legal work environment, exactly. And you provide that as well. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's why I brought it up is because this government is corrupt, there is a need for what you guys are doing here.
Yeah.
And that makes it all the more, like, people always, they always just, like, throw it out there, like, we can't get into politics, like, what are we going to do in these countries? It's like, get out there on your feet and just help the people who are struggling. You're maybe not going to cure the root of the plant right away,
right?
But you can sure supplement and help.
You know, what would be beautiful, and it's something that I've thought about several times, at Fox News, if you're listening to this,
or oh, they CNN, definitely are, yeah.
Come down. Come to Honduras. You know, you're always recovering the bad things that are happening, the reasons for this. But come and see some of the good things that are happening in this country. It's not all good, but it's not all bad.
It's not. Yeah.
Sounds like America.
There's stories of hope. There's stories of bright futures. You just have to dig for them sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. You were just talking about the mission being kind of a supplement where the government falls short, right? But that's not just a Honduras thing. Isn't that the church globally?
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're called to do is where there's a need, where there's people, we should be able to at least, if not meet the needs, at least alleviate them a little bit.
You know, there's a movement called Orphan Sunday.
Oh, yeah?
And it's the first, I believe it's the first Sunday in November every year.
Okay.
And there was a church in Texas. They, their pastor, somehow got pulled into foster care. And he discovered that there was so many children in foster care in their county.
Yeah.
And they took one in. And they became foster parents. And I can't remember all exact details. But them as a church decided, we're going to end this problem in our county. And so they took it on. And their church alone didn't fix the problem. But it set an example for other churches in the area.
Yeah.
And to this day, there is not one child in the foster care system in that county.
Wow.
And then not only did they, you know, took children in out of the foster care system, they provided resources. Because some people couldn't take in a child.
Yeah.
But they could provide a baby bed. They could provide clothing that they had, or they could provide a home-cooked meal or some type of respite care.
Yeah.
And so there's things that can be done to alleviate some of those things. And you talk about the church, that's what the church is called to do. And that church, that little church in Texas, they answered that call, and now it's a nationwide movement.
Yeah.
Orphan Sunday, to bring awareness to the foster care crisis that we have in the States. Yeah. And it's pretty cool.
That's great. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to need to look into that.
Yeah, check into
make
that.
Make that happen, yeah.
There's a conference that I attend about every year. This year it's going to be in Houston, Texas. And it's called CAFO, Christian Alliance for the Orphan.
Mm.
And it's where churches and missions organizations from around the world, they come together for a summit, for a conference, talking about best practices in orphan care, best practices in foster care, internationally and stateside. And I did not know until I started attending this conference, there's churches that have specific ministries dedicated to serving foster families in their community.
That's awesome.
And I mean, there's hundreds, there's thousands of these churches that have these ministries. And it's just pretty cool to be in a room of like-minded people that are serving the orphaned and vulnerable children stateside and internationally. It's pretty cool.
That is cool. Wow.
Praise the Lord, man.
Oh, that's awesome. You got any more questions for AJ?
No, something you were saying about the church having to supplement for the state or the country.
Yeah.
I was going to say, don't get me started on how I don't think Christians should say the Pledge of Allegiance.
That's
all I got.
Yeah. We just want to... thanks, AJ, for coming on again and making time for us. And now we can all go hang out poolside, I guess. I don't know. It's a hot day here in Honduras.
It's a hot day, folks.
Yeah. So, yeah, we got dinner coming up here. Oh, no, we don't. My clock is still America time. Oh, my goodness. That's good, because I am full of Honduran ice cream. So, yeah, with that, we'll just remind everybody that God's truth won't back down,
and neither should you.
Stay focused, stay aggressive, and above all, stay relentless for God's glory.